Hi there. Welcome to the New Life Live podcast. Steve here. And since 1988, New Life has been transforming lives one life at a time. Our goal is to provide you with wisdom from God's Word to give you hope and help in life's most hard, difficult places. One way we do this is through the live program that we share with our listeners here on this podcast. Now, you'll get to listen to callers bringing us their challenges, and our panel of counselors and psychologists provide insight, which you will learn from too.
Hello, everyone. It's Becky Brown, and today joining me is Dr. Sherry Keffer and Dr. Jackie Mac Harris, and we're going to be taking your calls. We've got some calls lined up, and today is Armed Forces Day, and we are so grateful for all of our servicemen and women who are serving all over the world. Really, it's just such an amazing sacrifice, and Jackie, I know that is part of your story. Thank you for your service.
Yeah, thank you.
There are some challenges that come with the military life, right?
Quite a few.
What do you suggest for us as, you know, we support those folks, you know, in the armed forces? How can we do it?
I think one thing we could do is just hear their story, because when you're not in the military, you have an outside perspective, and so it looks much easier than it is, and it looks like much more fun than it actually is sometimes. And a lot of times people have gone into the military because they need to, as much mm-hmm. as wanting to. And it can be a financial hardship when relationships are separated because their job has separated them. Being in the military means turning over your rights to the government, so you don't have the kind of choices that a civilian population has. There are things you're able to do and not able to do. Some things you can control and things you can't control, and that can play tricks with your mind. On top of that, some people have the horror of being harmed in the military. Mm-hmm. So military mm-hmm. sexual trauma is a very real problem. People being deployed to go to different countries and then coming back and reconnecting with their families, that can be really hard. That's what I study. I did my dissertation on a reintegration program for intimate relationships and family, because when my husband would come home, he would come home different than he was when he left, very shut down, and he's a very funny person, and he would feel distant from us because we didn't turn towards him. I'm busy doing all the things I've been doing for 6 months. I just need you to jump in and help. And he's trying to get his footing. And so I think we need to just know more about their experience, and so that we can give them a shoulder to cry on and let them talk out the hard things. And because the stigma around sharing their struggle, I think, creates more darkness. It creates more loneliness, and the suicide rate is incredibly high. And it's, I think a lot of it comes from the fact that the hopelessness is in, I can never tell anybody what I did.
You know,
sometimes they're experiencing moral injury, doing things the soul was never meant to do.
I was just thinking about those that have served on the front lines and coming back to what would be typical life, normal life, whatever normal is. But so
and
it's actually
never
tomorrow.
The same.
Actually, tomorrow is Armed Forces Day. I was all excited that I was going to have it today. But, you know, so how I would also encourage those of you who are listening, who are part of the service, you know, what can they do to reach out and ask for help?
Yeah. There are resources within their branch. There is a family resource center, so they can get referrals. They can call us and get referrals, but find someone to talk to. Your story matters. What's going on with you matters. It is not a weakness to seek out help. And we love you and thank you for your service.
We sure do, and we're so grateful. And so tomorrow on Armed Forces Day, if you happen to see somebody who's wearing a Armed Forces hat, maybe you buy their lunch or their breakfast, do something kind for one of our military members, because we do appreciate the freedom that they help us maintain and have.
And if it's a Vietnam vet, those of us who are post-Vietnam vets, we really want to cheer them on. So buy them lunch.
There you go.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. You know, we were talking about the service members and finding help. And, you know, one of the ways that we help people is through our workshops. And you can look online, newlife.com. We've got all kinds of workshops that can help you have a new life, have the life that God has created for you to have. And we want to help you in that process. Right now, we're going to go to the calls and we're going to talk to Sabi, who's calling us from Hungary, which is pretty amazing. Watches us on YouTube. We love our YouTube family. Sabi, thanks for calling. How can we help you today?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Hello.
Yes, go ahead. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at the beginning of April, my mother suffered a stroke.
Aww.
And so I live like 500 kilometers from my hometown. I went home for almost 3 weeks. And it was horrible. Like, my dad doesn't want to take a shower. He is, like, expecting to be served by someone. I mean, it's no surprise. For more than 30 years, my dad has been served by my mom. So my mom was doing everything, like putting the making food, everything. This will be a very long recovery process. I know that I have to establish boundaries, but still, I have the feeling that I might get influenced by my dad and my sister to go back home and do more than I am capable of. And I'm very careful because it was hard for me to be on my own and move out. And I'm just thinking, how could I be wise in this situation?
Okay, great.
How old were you when you moved out?
Oh, I moved out late. I was 30.
Okay. And was it hard because you felt responsible to take care of your mom in some way? Emotionally, what made it difficult?
Well, the fact that I'm far. So I was thinking, like, did I make a good decision to moving 8 hours far from my hometown?
But sometimes we do that as a boundary, right?
Yeah.
Because it felt like you were getting out of a web. Mm-hmm. But what kept you there? Was an emotional pull? Was it that you were struggling to launch and be on your own and your parents were making it too easy for you to stay there? They were paying for everything, so you didn't have any incentive?
Oh, no.
Okay. What made it hard? No. Was it an emotional thing? It feels emotional to me.
Yeah, I had career problems, job problems, and I was working with a therapist last year.
Okay.
And I found out that I was the slave in the family.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And you feel like you're being pulled back in to that oppression.
I cannot accept the fact that my dad doesn't want to turn on the washing machine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to accept that.
Well, you know what? That sounds healthy.
Yeah, that's reasonable. You said your sister and your dad may try to coerce you into moving back home. So is your sister close by?
No. She lives in France, in Paris. She went home. She's working from home. And she's trying to... she said that we should switch. We should make some shifts. Like, I go for 2 months home. Mm. She's going to go, and she wants to create a system. But
system would mean you would have to give up the life you fought hard for, sounds like.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so the question is, how can you help him? Is there a possibility of hiring some help? I know we have a system here in America, at least in California, Southern California, called in-home support services, where a nurse comes out from the county and they evaluate the elder and find out what they need to take care of themselves. If they need milk, help, or help with activities of daily living, and they'll assign a certain number of hours and then pay someone to be there during that time. They're paying minimum wage, and they'll come and do just the basic services. Could you all do something like that?
Yes, there is something like that. My mom, I feel stupid. I mean, I don't feel stupid, but I was the one who arranged for my mom a rehab home. So she came out from the hospital. We took her to this rehab home. She has intensive care there. But, okay, she is taken care of. My mother is taken care of in this elderly home.
Could you get one? Can you get a person who can come to your dad's house 4 hours a day during the week, and you and your sister take turns checking in on the weekends?
Well, yeah, I could do that, but my dad doesn't want this. Like, he doesn't want to order food. He wants me to cook for him.
I know. And you know what that is?
Wash the clothes.
Sabi, you know what that is? Grief.
What?
It's grief.
Well, and he's used to being cared for by his wife, and that was their system. She did absolutely everything for him. So on the one hand, he's an elderly person who doesn't have the skill to do some things. And if things are too technological, learning new skills, it can be challenging. If there's any cognitive deficit, it might be challenging. But it sounds like control, and he's used to being the king and being served. And in his mind, that is just right. So it may be very hard for you to get him to do those things for himself. But also, you can't allow him to pull you back into the web.
You know what I think is really difficult, Sabi? And I know this because my mom in February fell, and she has a spinal cord injury. She's 86. She went from walking to being in a wheelchair. She's also in a rehab home right now. But you know what has been probably the hardest thing, Sabi, for me? It's having reality conversations with my mom. Because you know what my mom says every time I see her and talk to her? I'm getting out of here. I'm getting out of here. By the end of the month, I'm going to walk. And she's in a wheelchair. Now we've got, she's getting some physical therapy. And I'm telling you, if anybody can do it, it's my mom. But you know what's happening is the reality of her circumstances is starting to seep in. And so it's meant that I and my sisters have had to have honest conversations saying, you know what, Mom, things are different now. I know it's not what you want. I know it's not what it's been, but there's some changes that are going to have to happen. Because if you and your sister just give up 2 months of your life and you accommodate your dad like your mom used to, he's not going to adjust to the reality that he's going to have to turn the knob of the washing machine. But do you know he's bargaining? That's a stage of grief. He's trying not to let it happen. He wants to put demands on you. But you have to have the tough conversations to get the help in.
Listening to me, like, she went home and I told my sister, don't wash for him, don't cook for him, because he's going to get used to this. She's doing it.
Okay.
She's serving him.
But that's a choice she gets to make. Her making that choice does not demand that same choice of you. And you can still hold your boundaries for what you're willing to do, what you're able to do, and what you're not.
Right. Well, so like she might be there for 2 months, right? Mm-hmm. She can do that.
If that
pamper
works for her, because she can work from home.
Right. But you might say, well, during my 2 months, I'm going to have a caretaker come in.
I also think, Sherry, your point about grief, Sabi, that's also your journey. This is also what you are feeling. And so some of this protest that you have about what your dad needs to do or what he should do is something that you have to work through because you're far from home. You broke free. You don't want to go back. You know, we get all of that. But it's also the work that you will have to do in your own healing of, I need to feel good about the choice that I make, allow my sister to make the choices that she's making, and move through this process. And that's harder than it sounds. Mm-hmm. But whenever you catch yourself in this kind of tension, what can I do? I love what you just said, Sherry, about, you know, if sister wants to do that for 2 months and then you're 2 months, you hire somebody. And if dad doesn't want that, then when she gets back, I mean, you just figure it out. But it's very emotional. It's a very hard journey for all of the family members, for sure.
I have another word for slave. I too am a chronic people pleaser, Sabi, and a codependent. And my heart breaks because I'm 5 hours away from my mom too. And my heart breaks when I leave her. I cry like mm-hmm. a baby. I get into the car and I can't even hardly get my world back together again. It takes mm-hmm. me some hours because I'm leaving her and I feel guilty that mm-hmm. she's not in good health. Like mm-hmm. some part of me wants to just quit my job and go there and take care of her. I wish I could, but I'm living with that tension of having to hold on to myself and hold on to my mom in a new mm-hmm. stage of life at the same time and be mm-hmm. a realist to what I am able to do. Yeah. And that's hard. And so as a people pleaser, maybe codependent, slave, right? Your health has come by learning what you can and cannot do and learning how to live without guilt.
I hope that helps, Sabi, and we'll be praying for this situation. It is tough. It's so complex, and there's so many of us that are going through this.
Yes.
I mean, I've got it. I know Sherry, you do it too.
All three of us, we were talking about that today. All of us have parents that are not in good places.
Yeah, and it's just hard. Well, we're glad you called, and we'll be praying for you. We're going to go back to the calls. We're going to talk to Melissa, who's calling us from Columbus, Ohio, listens to us on the internet. Hi, Melissa. How can we help you today?
Oh, boy. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes, we can.
Okay, so this is kind of crazy. So I'll give you the real short version, and you can ask whatever questions you need to ask.
Great.
I've been married for nearly 10 years, since 2014. I knew my husband. We were in relationship for about 14 years before then. We're both Christians. Trying to be morally, you know, biblically upright, did some things, but didn't actually have actual sex, was not intimate before our marriage. The day of our honeymoon, he says to me, there's not going to be any honeymoon. And so I didn't want to pressure him. I said, well, no big deal with that. And it's been 10 years, and I saved myself a marriage, so I have never been intimate.
Mm. And what conversations, Melissa, have you guys had about this over the 10 years?
It's been like, okay, so what's the issue? So before, at that time, you know, he wasn't working, I was working, you know, and I could understand the stress. And we were living, you know, in an area which wasn't great. So I knew that there might be any number of stresses on him that I just like, okay, I'm like, okay, that's fine. Also, you know, he would be angry a lot, so he would tend to throw off on me in ways that just did not suit whatever the situation was. It was like above and beyond, you know.
How old are you two?
I'm 53.
And
52.
He's how old?
54.
He's 54, and you're 52.
Yeah.
All right, Melissa, you can hear the music. We're going to go to a break. You had a succinct question. Why don't you ask it right now, and then we'll talk about it during the break.
Yeah. So what should I do? How should I go forward? I mean, I'm to the point where it's not a big deal to me anymore. I mean, and it is a big deal, but I don't even feel like it. The question is have I backed myself into a corner psychologically, you know, concerning this? Am I handling this right? You know.
Okay, we will answer it after this break.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. We are always glad to hear from you. And whether that's your calling here for the show or you need something, we're always there for you. And we're so grateful to be there for you. Right now, we are talking with Melissa, and quite a challenge, Melissa. But I think we'll be able to help you in some way or another. Sherry, let's start with you.
So, Melissa, first off, I'm heartbroken for you because that area of your relationship, your sexuality, you saved yourself. And I imagine you had some excitement, hope, expectations about adding that into this long-term relationship. You guys met when you were in your 30s, around 30 20, or so. 20, 29. Yeah, 29, 30.
Yeah, 29, barely 30. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you've spent a lifetime with him. Now, let me just share a couple facts. One, and men have sexual energy. They just have sexual energy. And that sexual energy goes somewhere. So the fact that on your honeymoon night, when you're finally at a place that you can consummate a, you know, 15-year relationship of being together, and then he says there isn't going to be a honeymoon, don't you think that's weird?
Yes.
Okay. Weird. And if something's weird, you know what I do? I go, okay, there's something that's hidden because this just doesn't make sense. So my next question is, what would make a man say that? Why would he have shame? Why would he have embarrassment? Why wouldn't he want to enter into this new adventure? And the only thing that came to my mind is something called ED, which is erectile dysfunction, meaning that there's parts of his body that are not working. And sometimes, I'm not saying this is you guys because I don't know, but sometimes men that look at pornography over a period of time end up getting ED. It's kind of God's stopgap for men that are looking at porn because what they end up do is they flood their brain with too much dopamine, too much serotonin, too much adrenaline, and body parts stop working until they start getting their head back in the game. Like they have to actually stop looking at porn. There's groups all over the world that there are men that are getting sober from pornography because their unit doesn't work.
Right.
So any history, inklings of pornography, either...
Yeah.
Okay, what? What was that, a yeah?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, okay.
It was fun. And there was an admission about it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for validating what the wondering was about, right? Because it's got to be something. Now, did you know about the pornography when you guys were hanging out for 14 years? Or is that something that you discovered after marriage?
No, I knew about it. It happened later on.
Okay.
Mind you, I'm horrified because I am on the radio. But... I knew about it later on because it happened later on. It was like fairly, it was a new thing. Like there's a lot of, well, it was a new thing that was picked up, right, later on for him. Mm-hmm. And then at that first 1 or 2 years of our marriage, there was an admission of it, and then it stopped because I would ask. Like there was a certain level of accountability that we were holding each other to. But I couldn't get to the root of this. I didn't even know what you said existed based on that.
I know.
That could be like a little chemical, scientific, hormonal, whatever. I didn't know that existed.
There's a TED Talk called The Great Porn Experiment. That's 13 minutes or so. It's done by a man, which I love, who talks about why ED actually happens. It's called The Great Porn Experiment. But, you know, like I can tell you right now, darling, that he's not stopped. He's that sexual energy, he's taking to pornography, and that's why he struggles with ED, and he doesn't have that wherewithal to be with you, sadly.
Well, and Sherry, talk about what happens with men who are looking at porn and then a real woman. What happens in the relationship?
Well, of course, Becky, because their brains have gotten stimulated by lots of pictures, and the brain loves pictures that change, and they like clicks and changes and things that look different. And so their whole arousal template gets scrambled inside. Their brain becomes pornified. So then when you have a real relationship where there's pheromones and connections and conversations and hugging and holding, you know, it's not even a horse race, because their brain has been so programmed and used to all these flashes of gloss and glamour that aren't even real. But again, it makes it very difficult for them to be with real females when they're in this deep. And so and I know you guys are holding each other accountable, but the bottom line is it hasn't worked, right?
Right.
Yeah, and so you need a major overhaul.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Overhaul for your relationship. He's got to come to every man's battle. Y'all got to make some big changes, and make sure you're going to get a copy of my book, because it will help make sense of this.
We will send you a copy of that. We'll also give you information, Melissa, that you can give him about every man's battle, because there is going to be a huge shift. And you didn't back yourself into a corner. You just didn't know what you were dealing with. So, you know, this is not on you. This is a relationship issue that can get people stuck in so many ways. But we're so glad that you reached out. We're going to get you connected with a counselor in your area, give you information about every man's battle, and send you Sherry's book. And we will be right back after this.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Club New Life supporters who give a monthly donation because they want to continue to offer help and hope in these very, very difficult places. To find out more about Club New Life, you can go to our website, newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, if you're new to us, we drop an episode every weekday. We would love it if you would rate or write a review, which helps more people discover help and hope, and helps us share wisdom with as many people as possible. Now, let's listen to our counselors as they help people walk through life's hardest places.
Glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. You know, we have a matching gift campaign going on right now. We had some amazing donors that started with a seed of $325,000. And if you give in this time, every gift, every dollar will be doubled up into that 300 so that we can meet that match, so that those funds can be released. You know, I was just talking with Jackie and Sherry at the break, and you know, it's amazing what we're able to help people with just by the radio, but we do so much more. You know, you never know who's listening. And just like our call just now with Melissa, we talk about these things literally every day. We talk about every man's battle. We talk about those things that impact us. Yet today was her day that she got the help that she needed. And we can do that because of the faithful support of our Club New Life members. And for those of you who are giving, it just makes sense. Such a difference in people's lives. So right now, during this matching gift, we would just want to encourage you. You can go to newlife.com. You can call 1-800-NEW-LIFE, and a gift of any amount will be doubled. I mean, what a deal is that? I mean, that's just awesome. So we just want to celebrate that and want you to join us in that matching gift campaign. Right now, we're going to go back to the calls, and we're going to talk with Cindy, who's calling us from Austin, Texas, and listens on KBBW. We're glad you called, Cindy. How can we help you today?
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Of course.
I guess the main question I have is, please help me understand how I keep falling for the same type of men, which is usually a man that wants me to take care of them. And then I'll give you a little bit of history of who I am. I am the oldest of seven kids, and I was kind of the third parent with my parents, co-parenting my siblings. So by the time I was 25, I had a nervous breakdown.
Aww.
And was already in a very abusive marriage. And when I got out of there, out of the hospital, I realized that I couldn't continue to take the abuse. So I got out with my son and raised my son by myself, became a Christian. And I had not dated. I devoted my life to raise my son and thought that if I wanted to remarry, would be when my son married. When my son got married, I dated someone from the church, and come to find out that he was the same as the previous men that were not Christians when I wasn't a Christian, and that just really left me spinning.
Hmm.
So that's where I'm at.
So you want to know, Cindy, how to pick a good man. That's what you're asking.
Yes.
So the same, give us a line, like they're the same because they do what? What do they do with you that makes them the same, that thing that bugs you the most?
Okay. The same, the last one, I didn't marry. So I feel like the only thing he didn't do that the other ones did, the other two, is he didn't hit me. Because the other ones were verbally abusive, they were physical abusive, and they didn't, if they worked, they worked very little when they wanted to. I was the breadwinner.
Got it.
These last one that it was in the church, met at the church and all of that, appeared to be different, but after dating him, and going through the layers of his family, I found out that basically he too was looking for a woman that would take care of him. Mm. So 3 weeks from the wedding that we were going to have, I called it off. When I was going through a severe cancer battle. But wow. He left me spinning because I thought, I can't believe I did this again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he would have been abusive because he was starting to get verbally abusive, and he was a womanizer. And although we were in the church, that's why I called off the wedding. I found out that he has been sleeping around, and I couldn't have that.
Well, you made a great choice, Cindy, by calling the wedding off. You're a brave woman. You're a strong woman. But you do need to find a good man. So, Sherry or Jackie, who wants to start and help Cindy have a better next relationship?
Well, Cindy, I'm a big believer that our problems in our relationships didn't start in the relationship. They started in our own childhood. And so I'm curious as to what it is about you, as you are, that sees those men as attractive. And I believe that sometimes it's just energetically, it's what we remember. It's what we know and are therefore comfortable with, even though it's not comfortable. It's not ideal, but it's what you know because you grew up in it. Being the caregiver, being the person to take care of everyone, being the person who finds the resources, who makes it happen. That's a very attractive thing. And I'm so sad that this left you spinning because quite often, I work with a lot of Christians, quite often people are having expectations of Christians to be different than everyone else because they know Jesus. And I think it's important for us to remember salvation is why we're Christians. That doesn't necessarily make us better people. We have to do our work. And so I'm curious, are you in therapy? Do you have your own therapist?
No, I am recovering from the cancer side effects and all of that, and then I have other medical issues that I'm dealing with.
I think therapy can even help with that. And, you know, our body is this interwoven system. And when something is going wrong psychologically, it affects the cells in our body. And you've carried a lot of pain and trauma around with you. It also informs how you view the world and how you make meaning. And so you make choices based on experiences you've had in the past. Your body recognizes this type person and is leaning into that. I think having your own therapist to help you work through the way that you make choices, the way that you engage in relationship, some of the traumas you've gone through, the healing process from cancer, the trauma of having cancer and going through the treatment, work through your stuff so that it's not informing your choices.
I love that. Sherry?
Yeah, and I have one question. You guys were engaged or dated how long before you, well, how long did you date before you got engaged? This last one.
I got engaged when we were 4 years into the relationship, and we said, and we were going to get married by the fifth year.
Okay.
But we dated 4 years.
Let me tell you just a little bit about me, because I can totally relate. I wrote down next to the guys you've dated, user. You're attracted to users and abusers, yeah. Right? And you're a giver. Mm-hmm. Like, you are the firstborn of a big family who has a badge of honor, because growing up in a home where you're considered the third parent, I mean, that's a burden. That is a heavy burden. And it's also an honor that doesn't feel honorable, but in a way, you were groomed, bred, you found caretaking, like you caretake like you breathe. And so yeah. You may not even know that when you get into the relationships, you start doing things you're overdoing in order for them to want you, pick you, choose you. But what you're ignoring is exactly what I was ignoring when I went through the divorce with Connor, who is like the last one you were with, a womanizer. I had to do my own work because I noticed my people picker was broken. But what I also noticed is I was attracted to addicts, narcissists, selfish people. And part of that was because I was an overgiver. I was a pleaser. I did things for people so that they would love me rather than having a good core sense of my self-image. Like, I transformed in a way that I learned how to love and value myself so much that if a guy was selfish user, if I got any clue that he was not being a partner in our relationship, I didn't stay. You stay a long time. Mm-hmm. You stay a long time and you put up with a lot of stuff too long. And that, my dear, is why Dr. Jackie said, hey, honey, invitation. What about thinking about doing some work? Because I'll be honest with you, Cindy, I couldn't have figured out how to get healthier on my own. I had to I had to go on my own gurney and let a counselor open me up to help me change up what I was doing. And I just hope you'll stay in the line and let us get you connected to somebody. Because we want you to change.
We will do that, because the support is so essential to the process of change. We'll be right back after this.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. We are going to send Cindy a copy of How We Love, because it will talk further about how we do love. How do we get into these relationships, as well as understanding how we connect? And, you know, like you were talking about, Sherry, with the pleaser, or just really understanding how our childhoods impact the way that we go about in the world. It's pretty profound, and we've seen it help so many people. Right now, we're going to go to our last caller, and it's Lori, who's calling us from DC, listens to us on WAVA, and we are so glad you called, Lori. How can we help you today?
Good afternoon. Thank you. my question is about Dr. Henry Cloud's book called Trust. And chapter one reminded me that I overtrust people, kind of like the previous caller.
Yeah.
Proverbs, in the book, Dr. Cloud mentions Proverbs 22, and it says that a prudent person foresees danger and takes precautions. The simpleton goes blindly on and suffers the consequences. And I relate to the simpleton.
Amen.
Because So what do I do about my extreme over-trusting or the blinders that I have on about people that I want to relate with?
Well, it's a great question, Lori. Sherry, let's start with you.
I love Henry Cloud. He's so bright. And, you know, I love how he hooks it right back into the Word of God, which gives us language for what we're doing. Kind of like the caller before, Lori, when there is an issue of trust where I'm over-trusting, I would say probably close to 100% of the time, I'm over-trusting because unconsciously I want their love. I want their acceptance. I want them to choose me. And so I'm going to give you what I want. I'm going to over-give. I'm going to accept you quickly instead of getting to know somebody. It's like a bank account. And I did this too, Lori, when I met Connor. We dated long distance for a year. I saw him 12 times and then we got married. So that'll tell you where my unhealthiness was. And because I was in fantasy, I wasn't even in reality. We were always up and excited to know each other. But you know what? I trusted Connor blindly. I didn't know ask questions about his integrity. I wasn't in a real relationship with him. I was in fantasy land. But I was okay to do that because I grew up in a home where we weren't real. We didn't deal with real issues of mental illness. We didn't talk about stuff. And I didn't know my own value. I felt less than. Like, if somebody were to spend time with me, I'm like, wow, Eureka. And so it makes me wonder about you, my dear, in where you've come from, kind of like Dr. Jackie said in the last segment about, you know, she feels like relational issues don't start in the relationship. They start in the family of origin. And so, you know, maybe there's a story you have growing up where you found that you needed to give to get love.
Is that true? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It sure is.
So
my dad had mental illness and my mom was an alcoholic, but they took good care of us, you know, physically, and that's where their emphasis was, you know.
Okay, but you know what? You already went into denial.
Yeah, you just qualified it.
We're here. We're loving on you, right? You just said, "Yeah, I grew up in a home. My dad had mental illness and my mom was an alcoholic." Guess what, sweetheart? And you were like, but they took good care of us. They didn't. They couldn't take good care of you because you weren't even seen.
Yeah.
You weren't loved. You don't even know what you're missing.
That's part of why it's so easy for you to trust, because the bar is so low.
Mm.
Right? It's low-hanging fruit. It is so low because you had an alcoholic mother and a mentally ill father who took care of you the best they could. All parents are doing the best they can with what they have, even when, you know, they're addicted and not there. That's all they have. But you have, over the years, been convinced, I survived my childhood. They took good care of me. And so the what they could give, the little that they had to give with the mental illness and the addiction, seemed to be enough for you. And now in adult relationships, you don't require a lot from people. Mm. You don't need a whole lot to feel like they are with you. And you will give them a whole lot so that they will choose you. So you work really hard. They respond to that. That feels like connection to you. And then you trust. And then they just go on about life being who they are. And in them being who they are, you get hurt. And then that's probably confusing.
So how can we help Lori in these last few minutes? How can we help her work on it?
I love what Kay and Mylan Yurkovich do in the book, How We Love. It helps us to see how we got to be the way that we are, but also helps us understand better ways of communicating so that you can go into conversations where you can go a little deeper. Tell me about a time when you felt like that, when there's a conflict with a friend and it blows up. How do you have conversations to get to know people more deeply? Like Dr. Sherry said, like you don't really know people well before you give them your trust. And so learning how to get to know people, how to communicate, how to ask deeper questions, which might not be something you learned because you didn't have parents who could do that with you. Learning that can help you repair your picker, right? You have to be, you got to become a bit more of a researcher.
And this is what I did, Lori, and I want to invite you into this big step. Is I got into a 12-step codependent recovery group. Because in there, they deal with low self-images. They deal with how we become people-pleasers to get our needs met. And in there, you will learn how to value yourself instead of taking care of people. And it forced me to look at me. I couldn't do it alone. I had to have support around me to help me come into an accountability and a learning and a healing that was deeper than just reading a book.
You know, Sherry, I've thought so many times about how you have talked about you will ask blunt questions to, like when you were in the dating process, you know, when you were trying to find the man, you would ask these questions that before you wouldn't ask. And you had talked about that just, and Lori, that's going to take practice, and that's where the group work can be so impactful.
I have to be willing to give up another person in order to love myself.
And if I have to give myself up for another person to love me, I don't want that person in my life.
That'll preach. All right. Lori, we're going to send you a copy of How We Love. And also, I'll just encourage you, you can participate in a life recovery group. We have life recovery groups all across the country. Some meet online, some meet in person that can help you in that process. You know, we're so grateful for all of you who have listened today. You know, it is nothing short of a miracle that we are able to connect with you. And I don't say that because, you know, it's so hard. It literally, when you think about the struggles that we have and the things that we can share, it is really miraculous that people will reach out, and we are offering help, and we want to do that for you. We're grateful to have that opportunity, and there is help available. So whether it's a workshop, whether it is a counselor or a coach, it could be a book, could be tip sheets, whatever, you know, just know that New Life is there for you, and maybe you share it with somebody else, because there could be someone who needs the help that you love. And so we want to invite you to share the program. There's lots of different ways to do that, and we hope that you will. Thank you, Sherry. Thank you, Jackie. It's been a great day, and I think we've helped some people. If you need help, give us a call, because we're here for you.
Thanks so much for listening. We hope something you heard will help you live in freedom today. If this content was helpful for you, we would love it if you take a minute, leave us a review, post about it, and rate it. Remember, we have resources and workshops online for you as you continue your journey. Go to newlife.com and find out more information. And thank you for being part of the New Life community. We know that God desires all of us to live a life of wholeness and healing, and we're so glad that you're here.